You guys are in luck this week. A special edition of the Penn Stated Football Podcast, as if we didn't have enough to do already this week. Sam Freeman from the Citizen's Voice. I'm Donnie Collins from the Scranton Times. And Sam and I are here on a Friday to talk about the big news around Penn State football late in the week anyway, is the evident hiring slash expected hiring, whatever it's going to be, of Kansas offensive coordinator Andy Kotelnicki to run the Nittany Lions offense next season. I presume it won't be for the bowl game, but I'm sure we'll find out by the end of the weekend if that's the case. Sam, your early thoughts on the hiring. I mean, we've heard a lot of names over the last couple of weeks. Kotelnicki certainly was one of them. You know, he's a guy who I know they wanted him in Oklahoma. A lot of Oklahoma fans thought he would go there. Texas A&M was a spot where you heard his name kind of a lot. People love the guy at the smaller program who doesn't have a whole lot of talent around him, but makes it work. And I think really that's what he is right now. Sam, your thoughts, what you've probably watched a lot of video on him. What is your, what's your initial thought on what he does offensively? He's coached against Penn State before, so we do have a little bit of a background there from the games against Buffalo in 2015 and 2019.
Yeah, I think your point about, you know, thriving with smaller programs and, you know, relatively, you know, smaller talent pools is a great one. My initial thoughts are, and I say this hesitantly, you know, it feels like a great hire for Penn State. It seems like exactly the type of person that they need. Now, granted, I said roughly the same thing when Mike Yurcich was hired. And then, you know, a couple years later, here we are looking for somebody new. But to me, Kotelnicki seems like, you know, the type of coach that this offense needs. I mean, we've talked about throughout this season that, you know, Penn State has had trouble using their talent in ways that accentuates their strengths and masks their weaknesses. You know, when you're at a smaller program like Kansas or Buffalo, you're going to have to mask some weaknesses. And by all accounts, he's done a great job of it. You know, he's been an offensive coordinator for a long time, certainly at smaller schools. But I mean, if you look at the NFL and how hires have been made, especially at the head coaching position, I know it's a different level of football and it's a different position. But, you know, it seems like some of the teams are looking for the up-and-coming star as opposed to going and poaching, you know, having somebody take a step back. And I think that's kind of a nice move for Penn State here. Somebody that's still young in their career, still hungry, and I think has a real chance to innovate this offense in a way that maybe Mike Yurcich didn't in the past.
I mentioned that he coached at Beaver Stadium against Penn State, and I think James Franklin remembered this because he was the Buffalo offensive coordinator. He's been with Lance Leipold, who was a terrific head coach. He was with Leipold for 11 seasons, I think, dating back to 2013, back in their days at Wisconsin Whitewater. So they've been through it. And I think that's an interesting part of this, and maybe we'll get to that later. But in that game in 2019, they also played Penn State in 2015. They didn't have a whole lot of offensive talent in that game, but they had a little more in 2019. And Buffalo ran the ball for 184 yards. But if you take away a couple of sack yards, they were up over 200 yards running the ball in that game. And they ran it incessantly. Remember how many times they ran the ball in that game, Sam? Do you remember that game? Were you a student there at the time?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know how many times they ran it?
No.
58. 5-8. I was shocked. And I don't remember that. And look, I want to point this out. All these people who are, you know, went back and looked at this, you know, they did so under the guise of, oh, he must have been at Buffalo when Penn State was up. Nobody remembers that game. Nobody. Penn State blew him out. Nobody remembers that Buffalo was winning at halftime. Nobody would have remembered that Buffalo had 450 some total yards in that game. And nobody certainly remembered what Kotelnicki did in that game from a play calling perspective. But James Franklin did. I give the guy some credit because I'll be honest right now. I don't know if this move is going to work. I really thought he needed to go out and get somebody established, somebody who was going to tweak what they already do and not completely change it. And I think in ways he's going to completely change what Penn State does right now. So in some ways, maybe for the better, and some other ways, I'm not quite so sure. But nobody remembers what he did in that game except for James. And he really, at the weekend after, in his press conference, I think it would have been a Tuesday press conference at that point, somebody asked him about Buffalo and why they had so much success running the ball and why they were able to convert as many third downs. I think they were 10 for 23 on third downs in that game, which is a pretty good percentage. And they kept the ball away from Penn State's offense. And that wasn't a bad Penn State defense. They had Micah Parsons. Kotelnicki had to deal with that in that game at a very real level with not much talent. They had Jarrett Patterson, the running back, who ended up going, I think he played for the Eagles for a bit. I could be wrong on that. But James, after that, with some hindsight, a couple of days after that, said a lot of things that kind of proved to be prescient years later when he fired Yurcich, and had some similar criticisms of Yurcich of the things he praised Kotelnicki for: staying on schedule, first and second down, running the ball, continuing to run the ball. He said, the only time I could ever remember him saying this was that Penn State in that game hit their goal in yards per rush allowed, and still they couldn't get him off schedule. They just kept running the ball. And I think he really liked the persistence there, and he liked the game plan. And if you go and look at what he did at Kansas, now he had a good running back at Kansas. I have no idea who the kid is. I'll be frank about it. But number four, whoever number four is for Kansas, looks like a pretty good running back to me on film. So he had a pretty good running back to go with, but they ran physically, and they ran physically out of odd sets. They were unbalanced sometimes. They ran a lot of option, which is something I don't know if he could do at Penn State with Aller. I don't know if that's a big part of his game, but I don't remember that being part of the game with Buffalo. So maybe he's a little more adaptable than he's being talked about so far. We'll have to see. But James remembered those couple of games. And I bet you once he talks about this, it's probably going to be Sunday night. It's going to step all over the bowl announcement. But that's the next time he's available to talk, as far as I know, unless he's going to be later today. But he's going to say, I would almost guarantee that he remembered those two games and the approach Buffalo had and how persistent they were in the running game. And that is part of this hire I really like, because they needed someone to come in. And I mentioned it with Sider and Howell the other day when we originally did this week's podcast, that you have to stick with the run. He was very critical of Yurcich for not staying on schedule, not sticking with the run. And I think where Kotelnicki is innovative is in the run game.
I think you're right, especially from, you look back to a side note about that Buffalo game that I think is funny is I definitely remember that game because Buffalo was up at half against Penn State in 2019. And like you said, I think for all of the conversation around Drew Aller and the passing game this season, I really think the running game has been the shock of how inefficient they've sort of been this season, Nick and Catron. And I really think that's going to be the biggest difference, like you said, about Kotelnicki. Just the way I've seen some people breaking it down is sort of in the aftermath of the news coming out. Just the way Kotelnicki uses space. And that sort of thing can open you up. Most of those examples came from a run-centric focus, but the creation of space allows you to play a multi-dimensional offensive scheme as well. If you're creating space that allows you to, it allows you to attack through the air or on the ground. Part of the issues that have surrounded Penn State this season have been, if you can't run the ball, you have to throw the ball. You know what I mean? That's sort of been the idea that's been emanating from the sidelines this season. And when that happens, the defense is able to key in on exactly what's going to happen. So I like the idea of Kotelnicki's just the maximization of the talent that he'll have, something that we've seen throughout his career so far. And like you said, I think that, his impact on the run game is going to be something that pays dividends, or at least I'm assuming that's what the idea was in making the hire. Certainly, we've seen that, the something that is supposed to be somebody's strength as they come in may not actually play out, but that seems to be the calculus in this decision.
A lot of this, and it happened with Yurcich, I think. You have all this creativity on offense. You have these big plays. There's different ways to do small things. And I think Kotelnicki does that well. And he's had to, because I'll get to that in a second. But The Yurcich thing kind of reminds me of the old Mike Tyson line. Everybody's got a plan until I punch them right in the face. And I think Mike Yurcich had a plan and then realized in the Big Ten, you're going to get punched in the face. So I wonder that this whole thing with Kotelnicki, and I think to a degree, this is an analytics data-based hire by Franklin. And I figured he might do that. Does what Kotelnicki does work in the Big Ten, where you really, and we mention it all the time and we talk, and I roll my eyes just thinking about saying this, where it's really a two-game season. Mike Yurcich could beat everybody but Michigan and Ohio State. You're bringing this guy in to beat Michigan and Ohio State. What about what he does is going to work? I have not seen him do anything against a legit. Now, granted, he has no offensive talent whatsoever that he hasn't created himself. I mean, they have some decent players, but they don't have he's never had a Nick Singleton. He's never had a Catron Allen, never had a Drew Aller, never had an Olu, never had players like that. But he's also never had to face Ohio State and Michigan every year. Even Iowa. He's never had to face a defense like Iowa. The best team he played this year defensively was Texas, and they scored 14 points. Is that concerning to you at all? As somebody who thought this had to be a home run hire, I that's concerning. I'm not sure this guy is going to be able to figure out ways to score points. And if you look around long enough, if you go on social media, and certainly I don't listen to everything said on social media, but I tend to try to look at fan criticism of certain people, and generally they love the guy, but red zone play calling is something that if you go and look, I don't know what he's doing. And it's not been as good as it could have been. That's some of the comments you see. So I have my doubts, and yeah, he's going to have to prove it. And to a degree, yeah, obviously he's going to have to prove it. But I see a lot of people, home run hire, Dan Orlovsky, who is the most relentlessly positive guy in journalism. He can't find anything wrong with anybody. And I like that about him. I like Dan. But, you know, a home run hire, great hire. What a wonderful job by Penn State. And people believe this. Show it to me. They said the same thing about Yurcich. And I have seen nothing. And I'm not saying you got to score 50, but give me the one where you scored 30. And Texas kind of controlled them this year. And that's, you look at the total defense rankings, Penn State's right at the top, but right there is Ohio State right behind them, Michigan right behind them, Iowa right behind them. You know, there's some great defenses in the Big Ten. Could this work against them?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest question. The biggest concern is he's certainly unproven at the level that Penn State's going to need him to operate at. But I go back to sort of what we talked about earlier this week in my political science analogy, in the sense of, you know, an academic versus a practitioner. And I feel like it could be a mindset thing, right? Like when Yurcich comes over to Penn State, the quarterbacks that he's worked with, you know, are Justin Fields, Sam Ellinger, you know, NFL caliber quarterbacks that, you know, accomplished some good stuff in college, obviously, to perhaps make an understatement.
Mason Rudolph. Right,
exactly. Mm-hmm. So certainly not a talentless pool that he was working with. And it's no intentional shot at Kansas by any stretch, but I wonder if part of the idea of bringing in Kotelnicki is, you know, this is a guy that's never been in the driver's seat. Kansas has never been, during his tenure, been it's always been the upset. When they beat Oklahoma, when they beat Texas, it's top story of SportsCenter. You know, a top 10 team has fallen to Kansas. And although we talk about competence, we talk about how talented Penn State is, the inescapable truth is, you know, they are the little brother of Michigan and Ohio State, especially recently. And, you know, you can't go in there with the attitude of, you know, we're going to play scared, we're going to play this, we're going to play that. But I don't think Kotelnicki has operated his offense in that way in the Big 12. And again, it's a different culture in the Big 12. As you said, it's shootouts are more of a weekly occurrence than in the Big 10, perhaps. You could argue that's partially because of offense, but you could also make a very strong argument that's because of a lack of defense, which is not the case in the Big Ten. But I don't know. I wonder if there's an element of, you know, Kotelnicki has shown an ability to overproduce with weaker talent. So let's get some stronger talent. It's in his hands. But then also, you know, he's a guy that has pulled off the upset. And frankly, that's what it, when Penn State goes and plays Ohio State and Michigan, if Penn State wins, it's an upset, at least in this stage in Penn State's program history. it's an upset. And maybe that's the sort of mindset they need. Not, you know, not that, that they're on a lower level than Michigan or Ohio State, but we need to come in and be able to diagnose quickly what's not, what isn't working and what is working. And we need to, you know, sort of follow those trails to their conclusions, as opposed to, you know, pulling out the double pass or whatever it may be, rather than trying to pull into our bag of tricks and outthink the other team, which have very, very smart, intelligent coaches on the other side of the field. You know, rather than trying to outthink them, just find out what works for you and play your game better than theirs.
We're on record. This had to be a home run hire for James. This has to work. Now, it doesn't. I don't necessarily know if it has to be something everybody's thrilled with at the beginning, but it has to work. And I think James knew that. I mean, that's kind of common sense. I mean, James wants it to work. So, you know, he it's not like he wants to roll the dice and give a guy a chance and see if it happens. He's confident. He's going to say, this is the guy. Are you as surprised as I am that the general reaction to this has been as positive as it is? Because what percentage of people do you think before Penn State fans here, before Yurcich was fired, before the last couple of weeks in October, what percentage of Penn State fans had ever heard of Andy Kotelnicki?
Yeah, I do think people's lines of vision sort of expand as you start getting frustrated with your own offensive coordinator. But I'm with you that I'm sure the number was not as high as it is now.
It was definitely lower than the amount who had heard of Mike Yurcich, and definitely lower than even probably than the amount who had heard of Kirk Ciarrocca. It's fascinating that in this way to me, because, you know, you look at it and the insiders, I would call them like the Orlovskis, the, you know, the college guys who are national writers. They loved it. This hire has been universally embraced, I think, by the experts. And if you go to the message board, I go to gauge fan reaction there. I saw a lot of positives to it. People thought this was the right guy. And I just think it's hysterical, because nobody would have known who this guy was. He coached against them twice. But if you look at the numbers, the analytics, which I think here's where analytics are great. People who don't really know everything in depth could look at the numbers and compare, and it tells you a story. And Sports Source Analytics, I'm going to say this right once, because that's just going to be a word I can never pronounce. But they do a lot of work with college football. They I believe are the stat guys, the analytics guys, the data guys, whatever you want to call it, for the playoff committee. They provide a lot of that stuff to the committee. So they're doing respectable work there from an analytics standpoint. Their numbers on Kotelnicki are great. I mean, they love the guy. They really value what he does. I mean, here's what he does as a passing offense. Third highest percentage of 15 plus yard passing plays in the last 2 years. Penn State's 77th. His team ranks pretty highly. Sixth highest pass yards per pass attempt. Penn State was 73rd in that. You know, there's a lot of other numbers that you look at that they provide. 12th most in points per possession scored. Penn State was 16th over the last 2 years. 10th in percentage of possessions scoring a touchdown. Penn State was 15th. That's better than Yurcich, but Yurcich had to face different kind of competition. And it's tough for me to sit here and say that the analytics say everything, but they say something, I guess. And I think, you know, again, baseball background. So I remember I did one of the first stories on analytics, I mean, maybe 15, 20 years ago, right after the Moneyball book came out. And I talked to one of the guys who was working with the Yankees at the time. And they said, how much do you guys get into analytics? And he said, we pick and choose what we want to value. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. But to a degree, it also doesn't. And I'm wondering what value Franklin puts in certain numbers, because ninth highest percentage of rushing plays gaining 4 yards plus. That to me is a great number. Ninth highest percentage in the country of 4+ yard rushing plays. If you gain 4 yards a rush and you're getting 4 yards a rush at that high a clip, your offense is very good. That's just the fact of the matter. And I'm wondering, you know, what numbers would you like to see Penn State, even not beyond Penn State, but a good offense be strong in? That to me is one of them that I look at and say, you're pretty good. If you're getting a high percentage of plays are going for more than 4 yards per play. Number one, you're on schedule. Number two, you're able to run the ball consistently. You're able to stick with the running game. You're able to be unbalanced, frankly. If he can maintain that for Penn State, he'll be successful. That, to me, is a really strong number. And everything else kind of is the big plays and the passing game percentages. That, to me, is based on personnel. But you could scheme four-yard rushing plays. And I think we've seen that a little bit with what he's been able to do at Kansas.
Well, I think another number that Sports Source pointed out that I think is important, and I know that I joked about Franklin's comments about third down percentage being an identity, and I still don't agree that it's an identity, but it is still an important piece of an offensive game. And Sports Source has Penn State as the 38th highest third down conversion percentage, whereas Kansas under Kotelnicki was fourth. Now, again, there's confounding variables there. Confounding variables could be Kansas finds themselves in more third down situations. It could be any number of things, right? But to me, the ability to keep a drive alive under, a third down's a pressure situation. You know, everybody knows what you're trying to do. On first down, on second down, you might not be trying to get to the sticks. You might be trying to, establish the run. You might take a shot downfield knowing that it might go incomplete and you've got, more plays in your pocket. Third down is a little more in the trenches. And the fact that they're converting those at such a high rate at Kansas, I think, and especially it might even speak to another reason that Franklin made this hire, right? Is Franklin talks about consistency in the run game, as you pointed out, with yards per rush and 4 yard rushes and everything. But he's also brought up the third downs, and perhaps he's looked at all this stuff that he's been touting all season long, and Kotelnicki just seems to align. Not to get too off topic, but I do have a question for you on about Kotelnicki. Well, about the impact of Kotelnicki, right? So at Kansas, I was doing some reading beforehand, and I saw that his contract was, I think it was reported as $1 million per year. And obviously the Penn State doesn't, make those numbers available. But to me, my instant reaction is that, they're probably paying him more than Kansas was. Just that's a natural conclusion to jump to. Does this impact at all the Manny Diaz situation, do you think? Because we've talked about how we think the offensive coordinator needs to be a home run for Franklin right now, but also Diaz is such a big part of this defense. Is there too much money flowing right now to make a competitive offer to Diaz if he gets other negotiations going, or do you think that this is sort of unrelated?
No, I think we should talk about this because I had kind of a similar thought of how does this affect the rest of the coaching staff, and we'll start with Manny because if he doesn't get a head coaching job, and he's up for a few, but I'm not 100% sure that I've heard somewhere that I'm sure he's going to go. But let's assume that he's going to come back to Penn State. And let's assume that I think I read what you read. I read that this buyout was something like $700,000, which is not insignificant. I think Penn State paying that to get an offensive coordinator who's never coached in the Big Ten, that tells you something. They assume this guy is going to be pretty good, but Manny's good. I know it. Yeah. And I don't know what Manny's making, but I kind of chuckled at, the thoughts that, Manny's still getting paid some, a vast majority of his salary from Miami. So he doesn't really need the money. Well, you should pay Manny what he's worth. Come on, guy. Yeah. So if he's worth $2.5-3 million a year, Manny should be making $2.5-3 million a year. If that's the going rate for the top defensive coordinator, which I believe he is, then they should be paying him that. And if let's assume that Kotelnicki is making more than $1 million, I don't know how much more it's going to be, but let's assume it's significantly more, 500,000 more, $1 million more, then yeah, I think Manny's got to get a raise out of that. He's got to get a bump. And I think that there will do that. They usually do the right thing kind of, just because we don't hear what the numbers are doesn't mean they're not doing the right thing by the coordinators. And they seem happy enough. Nobody's leaving for more money for lateral moves. If Manny wants to be there, he's going to be at Penn State, but I think Penn State should do the right thing and pay him more than Kotelnicki's getting, whatever that number is, and pay him significantly more, frankly. But I think as a whole on this staff, now you have some other questions here, because what does Kotelnicki do besides call the plays? He was, I guess, the tight ends coach at Kansas. I don't know if he had that official title anymore, but at one point he was the tight ends coach. He coached, he has a history of coaching offensive line, but that was many years ago. He has a history of coaching special teams. But assuming they're not going to just stick him in as quarterbacks coach with no history of doing that, then this will be the first offensive coordinator since John Donovan at Penn State to not also be the quarterbacks coach. So what do they do? Is Kotelnicki strictly going to be the offensive coordinator slash play caller? Is he going to pick up another position? If he picks up another position and it's tight end, what do you do with Howell? I don't think that's going to happen. I can't picture a scenario where they're going to tell Ty Howell to go do something else because he's such a good tight ends coach. But if you're not, you're also not going to have a quarterbacks coach on the staff. And I get that the popular opinion here is that Danny O'Brien, the graduate assistant who has in essence been coaching Drew Aller all season, is going to be the de facto quarterbacks coach. But isn't Ryan Day going to tell a quarterback prospect, you're going to go to Penn State? Why? They have a graduate assistant coaching quarterbacks. Why would you do that? I think it's a real roll of the dice to bring in somebody who's not a quarterbacks coach. And that's why you heard the rumblings about Kotelnicki, but it's why I didn't think it was eventually going to happen. You know, there were other options out there that they were discussing that were also quarterbacks coaches. So you're buying into this guy 100% as a play caller, 100%. He's got to work out as a play caller, as a play designer, because now you have some issues. You're taking a little bit of a risk on the quarterbacks coach. This is a little bit of a square peg in a round hole, and maybe you need a square peg, but it's not necessarily something that's going to work with the rest of the staff in some areas. And that's one of them. You know, how much does he get paid as opposed to Manny? Because I don't care if Manny's making tens of millions from Miami still, he's still owed by Penn State what he's worth to Penn State, and he's worth a lot.
Yeah, I'll certainly be interested to see what happens. I'm as you said, I'm on record as well saying, you know, I think Manny might be even more important to this program and this team than whoever was coming in as the offensive coordinator. And who knows? I mean, maybe part of the calculus, I mean, and like I said, I know that they're going to be paying Kotelnicki almost certainly more than he was getting paid in Kansas. But, you know, we talk about, you know, we thought maybe they would go after a more established name. Maybe that's part of the decision-making calculus there is we can save a little bit of money going with the up-and-comer with probably future career aspirations in Kotelnicki. And we can allocate more money to Manny to make sure that we can stave off some of these other offers.
I think it's a good point. I mean, I haven't thought of it this way until you just kind of said something that triggered it in me. Do you think he's making as much as Yurcich was going to make?
Honestly, that's very interesting. I don't.
You could save some money and give it to Manny. I guess.
I hadn't considered that, but I mean, following that trail, I mean, Yurcich was coming in with this pedigree of having developed, you know, Justin Fields, Sam Ellinger, Mason Rudolph. It was pitched as this home run hire. This, you know, we're elevating the offense into a completely new stratosphere. Maybe they did. Maybe that's how they attracted him to State College. Was, hey, we're going to pay you a ton of money. Why don't you move up to freezing cold Pennsylvania and, you know, and restart our quarterback room? Maybe that's what it was.
We said this on Monday, I think, but whoever the new guy is going to be has to be complimentary to what Manny does. So if you're bringing Manny back, this guy's got to be complimentary on offense to what Manny does on defense. Where I think this might be attractive to Kotelnicki is the defense has always tried at Kansas and failed at Kansas to be complimentary to him. You know, you look at some of the analytics again, sixth in yards per pass attempt, which I think is a direct correlation to how well they run the ball, because you're able to scheme some throws off your runs. And that tells me that they run the ball again very well, but they also have to make big plays because they're always trying to come back and come back quick because their defense was, go watch some Kansas highlights from this year. They were really bad defensively, and they usually are, but that's life as that kind of a program where, it was going to be life at Penn State under O'Brien when they didn't have the scholarship players and they were just going to try to outscore everybody. And that's what he wanted to do. But I think it'll be interesting to see if he could be complimentary to Manny. And I think if you're going to be complimentary to any defensive scheme, it's Manny Diaz's. So I think he might be looking forward to that because technically speaking, what do you want to do to be complimentary to Manny Diaz's scheme? You want to run the ball and this guy runs the ball. So I think it'll be fun to watch.
Oh, 100%.
Sam, thanks so much for joining us on short notice today for the impromptu version of the Penn Stated podcast for this week. For Sam, this is Donnie. Thanks so much to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again next week.